Truth with Ruth Beltran and friends. Stay tuned.
You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 Bradenton. The views, comments, and opinions that come from our interviews, shows, air personalities, and from our calling guests are uncensored, and those views and opinions can be widespread and extremely diverse. These opinions or views do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WSLR, Fogartyville, our staff, or volunteers. Get up, stand up. Good evening, Suncoast, and welcome to another episode of The Ruthless Truth. I am your host, Ruth Beltran, and I'm here with our other host, Ira. Hi, Comrade Ira. Welcome back to the United States.
I can't say I'm the happiest to be back. Sometimes I still wish I were in Cuba, but thank you so much, Ruth. And it is always a pleasure to be back on the show.
Yes, yes. And during our show, we will be speaking about Ira's trip to Cuba and what that was all about. But before we get started, let's go ahead and start with our true updates. Ira, I know you know that this past weekend was one of the biggest demonstrations that we have seen, the No King Days March all throughout their entire country. It is estimated that 7 to 8 million people march in all cities across the country. People spoke out about the war in Iran, ICE, the economy, and, you know, many of the other things that they are seeing go wrong at the hands of our government today. I am just glad that we did have, you know, a large demonstration. People tend, you know, some studies show that after, I believe it's, you know, 3-5% of the population that comes out, that our protests begin to be more, they start being more impactful. So I really hope that's where we are heading. And now our second true update is that members of the convoy that deliver humanitarian aid to Cuba were detained and interrogated by Customs and Border Protection upon returning to the United States on a charter flight from Havana. Of the 20 U.S. citizens that were pulled for secondary inspection at Miami International Airport on Wednesday morning, 18 of them had their phones and other devices seized by Border Protection, with little information given on whether or when they will be getting those devices back.
Yes, luckily, you know, that did not happen to me. I am extremely grateful to say, but some of our interview clips and footage were on some of those phones that got taken. So we will have more content in the future once those are back into comrades' possessions. But yeah, it was definitely scary going through the airport and looking on my phone and seeing, like, in real time what's happening to other comrades. But I'm very grateful to say that I got back completely safe and no interrogation on my part for if anyone was concerned.
Yes, thank you so much for that. And Conrad, I know that throughout social media, you know, throughout the entire time that you were in Cuba, in social media, I was able to see many videos posed and, you know, a lot of information coming in from people that were part of this delegation and this convoy that went to Cuba. Now, the corporate media didn't show it, of course, but I know that this was a very important event. So why don't we start with you telling us why this trip to Cuba, with the hundreds of people that were able to go to Cuba and deliver that humanitarian aid, why this was so important, particularly right now as our government speaks about taking action, you know, negative action against the government of Cuba and the people of Cuba. Why was this delegation so important?
Thank you so much for that question, Ruth. I think it's very important that we, and I say we as the world, we all show our solidarity with the Cuban people as they have this extremely difficult time. And that's really what the event was about. Yes, aid was brought. Yes, a lot of aid was brought that will have an impact on people's lives, especially the medications that I helped bring with the Hot Way Project. you know, there are children who are going to live, who have cancer, who are only going to be able to be treated now because of the aid that we were able to deliver. And I'm very proud of that work. But beyond that, simply bringing our solidarity and our love for the Cuban people was very important. It's important to show the Cuban people that not only are they not alone, but they are beloved and supported and championed from people around the world, and that people around the world want Cuba to be left alone and, you know, let Cuba breathe.
Yes, that's one of the strong messages that we've, you know, we've said for a number of years when we say, let Cuba leave. Part of the problem that's going in Cuba, it's that the island had not received oil, you know, in over a month. And I know that that is having an immense consequence on the hospital system, the transportation system, and everything else. But who composed it? The convoy that just went, it was called Nuestra America Convoy. And I really loved that name. I felt like you guys were going there to love on people, on the people of Cuba, and to show them that, you know, people inside the United States, we do not hate them. We have nothing but really love for them and want to see them succeed. But how did that name, Nuestra America Convoy, you know, touch you? Why was that important?
I think it's really important to show that we have love and solidarity with the Cuban people. We here at home, you know, and even I was telling everyone that I was from Tampa, that I was from Florida, I really wanted people to know that even in places where you'd think there'd be the most like anti-Cuban sentiment, that, you know, there is still love for Cuba. There is still solidarity for the Cuban people from every corner of the world. So, yeah, it's what I think it was about. And yes, it was definitely a very impactful emotional event. And one of the most impactful things I heard at this event was that Cuba does not need America. America needs Cuba. And I've been thinking about that ever since I heard it, because we do. We need the Cuban people. We need the Cuban healthcare system. We need everything that Cuba has to so freely offer and teach us about how to actually run a society and care for people. So it was a beautiful event filled with solidarity and a deep, deep resilience. So I left that event feeling extremely pumped up and optimistic about absolutely everything with the Cuban people.
Nice. And now there were people there from different organizations, right? I think you met an artist from DSA.
Yes. I met an artist named Tabitha Arnold, and she was so kind enough to give us an interview. She was one of the artists presenting art for the event. She made this big tapestry, I believe is what it's called. I held it up at the event, and it was beautiful. She's also with the Democratic Socialist of America. So let's hear from her now.
You can support the Cuban people by bringing them material aid. You can always travel to Cuba with a suitcase of donations, because so much trade is blockaded by the U.S. to Cuba. You can bring medical supplies, you can bring food, you can bring things that you buy over the counter at a pharmacy that are very difficult to get in Cuba. That's the first way. You can also learn about Cuba and fight back against the media complex that the U.S. uses to try to overturn the will of the Cuban people. So you can talk to people in your community. I live in Chattanooga, Tennessee, which doesn't seem like, at first glance, might not feel relevant to people in Chattanooga, why we're talking about Cuba, but our lawmakers are constantly passing bills and voting to continue the blockade on the Cuban people, and they have a vested interest in continuing it. So it is important to talk to people wherever you are and combat the propaganda that runs so deep among people in the U.S. It's also very powerful to do these things in organization and not alone. So if there's an organization near you that you can be a part of that's doing Cuba work, that can be very powerful. If you're not in a political organization, you can organize your workplace. You can join a union. You can organize tenants in your apartment building or on your block, organize your neighbors, do things with people collectively, and you will have power.
I really loved how she emphasized that we all have to do whatever we can to organize, and how you, in many different ways, you can organize and get involved wherever you are. You know, join an org, join a union, join something, was a really great takeaway that I enjoyed from her interview.
That's really nice. And now tell us a little bit about the Cuban Institute of Friendship with the People. You guys were there with them, right?
Yes. They were very lovely. We had a representative from ICAP, help us, kind of navigate around, and told us a lot about their history. And we, as we were actually walking to their building, because that's where we had, we're storing a lot of the medications, the cancer medications, we were actually stopped by some Cuban people, just Cuban people off the streets, you know, who had no idea that the Nuestra America event was happening, but just wanted to run into us and talk to us and thank us for our solidarity. It was very emotional. I cried. It was very kind. And, you know, there were hugs. And yeah, they really explained that something that stuck with me that one of the women said was the reason the whole world loves Cuba is because of Cuba's solidarity with the world. And that solidarity is what makes them Cuban. You know, they said, to do solidarity is what it means to be Cuban. And I just thought that was so beautiful. And they are feeling the love for sure. Like when they said that, like, they're like, they are so confident in the fact that the world appreciates everything that Cuba has done for them. And that they are so aware that, you know, there's so much love for Cuba. So, and I definitely was so grateful that I was able to go and spread the love and reinforce that message. Mm-hmm. So yes, then we headed over to, you know, the Cuban Institute of Friendship with the Peoples. We learned a lot about, you know, their history and the work they do. And they made sure that we were, you know, they didn't help us to get situated, and they were very kind and helpful. And yeah, we had some incredible conversations. And of course, they helped with the like logistics of getting the cancer medications to where they need to be. But of course, we still got to deliver that there ourselves.
Yeah, that's so good, Conrad. I'm glad that you were able to meet that and learn a little bit of the rich history that Cuba has, you know. But now you also went to the hospital, right? I know that there have been a lot of information on the news. I know that there was a well-known reporter, you know, corporate media reporter that went to Cuba as well, and he was reporting on his experience. How, you know, children ventilators are having to be operated by hand anytime that there is a blackout. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that and what that experience was like for you when you guys deliver the medication to the children and doctors at the hospital?
Absolutely. It was very hard, Ruth. It was very hard. Probably one of the hardest parts of the trip. Not like physically any sort, but emotionally, because, you know, to everyone listening, you are not angry enough at the American government and what they are doing to these children. The situation is quite dire. You know, one of the doctors, they talked about how there is a kid who recently got their leg amputated. And in any other country in the world, any other part of the world, this child would not have had to have their leg amputated, because in every other part of the world, there is access to medications that they could have used to treat the cancer in another way. But because of the blockade, these children are being denied life-saving medications. Kids, little kids. I'm even like, we met a little baby who has blood cancer, who can't even talk, who is unable to be treated in the way that any other kid could be treated. You know, leukemia has an 80% cure rate for children who have access to medications. And these children are being murdered by the American government, or at least they're trying to. But thank God for the dedication of the doctors there at the hospital. It was truly it was truly world-changing to witness the resilience of these doctors, you know, going into work every day, well, through these blackouts, through these shortages. And, you know, Ruth, I want to talk about how a lot of people online are saying that, well, if you just go and you bring aid to the Cuban people, it's all going to be taken by the government anyway. And it is absolutely ridiculous. It is truly a delusional fantasy with zero supporting evidence. You know, I went with the Hatue Project. This is a project that has been doing this kind of aid for years. The people know Gloria La Riva. The people know our organization. And the doctors will tell you that, you know, because of this aid, some of the children who are now going to be able to get treated will live. Otherwise, many of these children would have died. Quite that serious. And what, a whole hospital full of doctors is somehow lying and all for like some big ploy to steal children's cancer medication? You know, it's laughable. It is a laughable and detestable concept. You know, like, are we brought $30,000 in medicine and cancer medication for these children? There are children there at that hospital who were going to die but will now live because of that aid. It is extremely important. I also want to just take this moment to encourage anyone who can to donate to the Hatue Project. It's HATUEYPROJECT.org. And every single bit of that money goes to aid. You know what? We had to pay for our own plane tickets. We had to pay for our own hotel stays. But and all of the money goes just to aid for these children and just to medication for these children. And also they are going to expand it to women's oncology centers as well. So children, because they're able to just be simply because of donations. So children and women with cancer. And yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. I got so many conversations with the doctors there. They thanked us so much. And, you know, the impact is real. They will talk at length on the impact of the Hatue Project and this longstanding friendship. And it is absolutely ridiculous to suggest that all this money is going to be stolen, so there's no point in donating. It's actually quite a detestable thing to say when we are talking about children's lives and people's lives here.
Yes, thank you so much, because that is one of the myths that we keep hearing, you know, things that we need to debunk. So thank you for mentioning that. I had a similar experience when I went in 2019. At that point, we brought in a lot of canes for people who are blind, and we were able to deliver those directly to the homes of people who were blind without any, you know, government intervention, really. We just directly went and gave it to them. But also that brings me to another myth that I want to debunk as well. How about this whole idea that the convoy caused the second blackout, or that you had, you know, 5-star hotel accommodations and things like that? What are your thoughts on this myth that are being put out by American propaganda?
Yeah, so it's very ridiculous. Well, for starters, for people who are unaware, there is a list of hotels that American citizens are allowed to stay at. All of these hotels are owned by foreign companies, non-Cuban, you know, foreign companies. A lot of them are Spanish, et cetera, et cetera. They are privately owned hotels because the government doesn't want you staying in any of the state-owned hotels. So you can also stay at Casas Particulares, but for big aid organizations and groups of 10, 20, 30, 40 people at a time, you don't want people spread to the wind. That's just not safe or good organizing. So you want to get everyone in a hotel, of course. Now, all of these foreign-owned hotels are typically like 3- or 4-star hotels. But they're the only hotels Americans are allowed to stay at. So if you want to get mad at someone for the hotel accommodations, go yell at the U.S. government and tell them to get rid of this ridiculous list that limit where Americans can stay. It's absolutely very silly and ridiculous. And it's very easily debunked. So yeah, we were able to stay at a place, associated with the Cuban Union of Journalists, and it's basically a hostel. But, you know, regardless, I do know that there were, I did talk to a lot of people who were not U.S. citizens who were staying at some of the state-owned hotels. And another thing people are not thinking about is there are no tourists in Cuba at this time. Now, Cuba used to be able to produce many, many different things like nickel and sugarcane and all of that. But because of the economic barriers put on by the U.S. government, they have shifted a lot of their economy to be built on tourism. There are multiple hotels who were open that week who would have had to close, where hundreds of people work, who would have had to close if it wasn't for people staying at those hotels with the convoy. So the Cuban people are very happy to have people come stay at the hotel, tip at the hotel, spend their money there, because so much of the economy, especially in Havana, is based on tourism, because it's had to be based on tourism, because that's one of the few things that you can get any sort of foreign investment into. You know, a lot of people will look at, especially some of the new buildings Cuba's building, like the new hotels they're building, that because of foreign investment, and be like, why are they spending money on this? Why are they building up all these nice hotels? Well, when you economically strangle a country, and one of the few things they can do is take money from foreign businesses to invest in something, you know, a foreign like business in from Europe is not going to invest in housing. The housing's free in Cuba. They're not going to invest in hospitals. The hospitals are free. But what they can invest in is hotels. So Cuba has quite a significant tourism industry. And it's quite a good thing that any of the nice hotels that people were staying at, that people were staying there. Because tourism is so low. Now, like I said, the American citizens, they have a very limited list of where to stay. But people who are not American citizens kind of get to stay wherever they want. Lucky them. But it's a very silly argument, because the tourism is good for the Cuban people, for starters. And two, you can only stay where America lets you stay. So people's hands are tied regardless.
Thank you so much. It has been so insightful to learn about Cuba, to learn about this Nuestra America convoy that went there, and, you know, how many people from throughout the world, really, because it wasn't just people from the United States, but people from throughout the entire world were able to show solidarity with Cuba and are able to say, particularly to the American government, that we are watching and to be careful what they do in Cuba, and, you know, not to cause any destruction to the Cuban people the way we have taken military action against many other countries, and, you know, actively bombing and killing people in Iran now. So really appreciate you for sharing your experience in Cuba with us today. Thank you.
Absolutely, Ruth. And I want to end this part of the show off with a couple messages from some of the Cuban doctors that we got to meet at the Children's Hospital. And I'd like all of our listeners to really take to heart what they had to say. We're going to have this section translated, because none of them were comfortable giving an interview in English.
Yes, let's go ahead and listen in.
The patients of the Juan Manuel Marquez Hospital, which practically covers the entire island, with very young patients with leukemia. This hospital is working thanks to your aid. I want to repeat myself, so you tell the people that are not here. The cancer patients, which come from the entire island, are being taken care of thanks to your aid. For example, we had zero carboplatin, zero, and we are one of the services that uses the most carboplatin because it's used in a lot of protocols of central nervous system tumors. And since we are the National Institute in Neurosurgery, all of the central nervous system tumors are treated here at Juan Manuel Marquez. We did not have carboplatin. We insisted with Gloria about the vincristine because the same thing happens. Vincristine is used in most pediatric oncology protocols. It is a medication that is used often and runs out quickly. With cytarabine, we were about to hit zero, completely running out of cytarabine because there was a patient that needed it and we had to give it to her. So we were going to use all our cytarabine reserves. We had a lot of issues with anti-vomiting medications, which for us are fundamental because it is not only about the treatment. It is about the patient's quality of life. Because unfortunately, chemotherapy does not have a specific target. Chemotherapy affects the entire body. And one of the main symptoms is vomiting. Imagine a one-year-old getting chemotherapy and not being able to stop vomiting.
Oh, right. So, yeah, like I said, very heart-wrenching listening to how these doctors are dealing with the struggles that these children, little babies, are going through. And one last thing before we get into our ice watch is there is this beautiful mural outside the Children's Oncology Center that was painted by the kids that were sick, painted by sick kids, mostly teenagers. And it is a mural of solidarity for Palestine. And I find it so beautiful how these children who, you know, the U.S. government, I'm perfectly comfortable saying, is trying to murder these children. The U.S. government is trying to kill these children. The U.S. government is trying to kill as many Cubans as they can through this blockade. And yet, they have so much solidarity and love in their hearts from such a young age for people going through, you know, the shared oppression from, you know, U.S. hegemony. You know, I got to meet a Palestinian doctor working at the hospital, and he talked about the importance of solidarity. And he was so proud to show me the mural. And I really think we should all try to be a little more Cuban. I think we should all try to always remember the importance of solidarity. And right now is the time to have solidarity with the Cuban people. I encourage absolutely everyone listening, go to the Hotway Project to make a donation. If you are a doctor, especially, get in contact with the Hotway Project. They're always looking for more doctors to bring on board. One of our comrades we brought was a doctor. And there are many, many different ways to get involved. And I think, honestly, it's our responsibility as people living in the belly of the beast, living in the empire, to do everything we can to show our solidarity and help the Cuban people, because it's not just for show. It's deeply impactful, and lives will be saved through this hard work.
Thank you for those deep words. And that is our main show to all of our listeners. Now we will go ahead and move on to Ice Watch. Part of our Ice Watch is a news article that came out in the Bradenton Herald, titled Eyes to Expand Office Footprint in Southwest Florida. And this article basically speaks how ICE is looking to expand operations throughout the country, but they are in particular looking at 11 Florida cities, including Sarasota and Bradenton. So don't be surprised if you start seeing, you know, more offices. As we know, there is a lot of money involved, agencies that are basically, you know, making money out of that, like the Sarasota County Sheriff that has brought in over $1 million as part of this enforcement, etc. And then, unfortunately, our other update is another death. And this one doesn't surprise me, Conrad, because we continue to say that death will continue to happen as long as there are no changes, right? So in this case, a Mexican immigrant died in immigration custody in Los Angeles on March 25th. And we just uncovered that. And this is the 14th death in ICE custody of 2026 alone. And of course, this is prompting criticism, not only from the people living inside of the United States, but also from the Mexican government, as many of the victims have been Mexican and from different parts of the world.
Absolutely. We have to remember that, unfortunately, it will continue unless we put a stop to it. Now, on to our next in neighborhood. You know, another death by the empire. Justice for William Tyrone Bell. So I'm telling all of our listeners to please consider supporting the family of the late William Tyrone Bell.
Bradenton police and SWAT forces entered the Bell home this month and shot him on site in front of his own family. Bell has already suffered from partial paralysis after suffering from a number of strokes in his life. The Bell family is continuing to seek answers and justice for William, but are desperate in need of assistance to pay